Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dear viewers, this is the fourth session of the 16th topic, and we know that in this topic we have been discussing the introduction of the vowel signs and diacritics in the earliest Masahif. In the previous sessions, I had presented before you the Muslim accounts of how these diacritics and vowel sounds were introduced, and then we had gone on to critically evaluate these accounts, and we had seen that there are primarily three phases in which this whole endeavor can be divided. The first of them constitutes the first vocalization phase, in which Abul Aswad ad-Duwali is alleged to have introduced vowel signs, and then it was followed by a diacritics phase in which people like Nasr ibn Asim, Yahya ibn Yamr, Hassan al-Basri, at the behest of Hajjaj ibn Yusuf, introduced diacritics, and we had also critically evaluated all the accounts which say so. And the third phase, viewers, is the second vocalization phase, in which we'll discuss today, inshallah. And if you recall, we had gone through the fact that the earliest vocalization phase, or the first vocalization phase, once it had been introduced, after that, when the diacritics phase was introduced, people thought that there was a lot of confusion in reading the Masahif, because not only the vowel sounds or the vocalization consisted of dots, but also the diacritics themselves, which are part of the letters, they also consisted of dots. So the whole page would be filled with dots, although they would be of different colors. For example, the vocalization dots would have a different color, and diacritics, which also were represented by dots, had the same color as the script. But then again, this was something confusing, and it caused misreading. So therefore, it is alleged that in the times of Khalil ibn Ahmad al-Farahidi, the famous grammarian and scholar of Arabic, and he was also scribed the first dictionary of Arabic language, Kitab al-Ayn, in his times, he was the person who had who caused an innovation in these Masahif, and that was that he actually changed the dots of vocalization into certain other shapes, which are actually forerunners of the shapes of dashes that we have today on the Masahif. So it was in Khalil Ahmad al-Farahidi, it is said that the second phase of vocalization began, and it was just a change in the signs of vocalization. The dots were replaced by some other signs, which were later on then converted into dots, into dashes, the way we see our Masahif being vocalized today. Now, in this session, we shall critically evaluate this endeavor, which has been ascribed to Khalil ibn Ahmad, and see whether it stands to the test of historical criticism. The first question, viewers, which comes to my mind is that in this second vocalization phase, the most important thing, as always we do discuss, is that whenever an endeavor or a feat is done or attributed to be done by a person, then we check its historicity by how it is recorded and reported in history. Thus, for example, in this case also, Al-Farahidi has several students who report narratives from him, and who are very diligent students, but we do not find any of his students transmitting the fact that he's a person who was involved in this vocalization or change in the pattern of vocalization. Hafiz Mizzi has recorded the names of his students, and I am just going to read out these students. Some of them are very famous, and we can see that none of these students transmit the fact that Khalil ibn Ahmad was the person who had anything to do with this development of vocalization, changing the dots into shapes which are precursors or forerunners of the dashes that we have today. So, for example, we have Ayyub ibn al-Mutawakkil al-Basri, we have Badal ibn Muhabbar, we have Hammad ibn Zayd, Dawud ibn al-Muhabbar, Sibawayh, who is also a very celebrated authority of Arabic language, so he was the student of Khalil ibn Ahmad. His actual name is Amr ibn Usman ibn Kambar. Then we have Abdul Malik ibn Karib al-Asma'i, another famous authority. Then we have Ali ibn Nasr al-Jahzami, Aun ibn Umara, al-Mu'arrij ibn Amr al-Sadusi, Musa ibn Ayyub, al-Nadr ibn Shumail, Harun ibn Musa al-Arwar, another famous authority, Wahab ibn Jarir ibn Hazm, and Yazid ibn Murra. So these are the famous or prominent students, and most of them have been actually, all of these names have been recorded by Hafiz Mizzi in his Tehzeebul Kamal, but there is no such report from them which tells us that Khalil ibn Ahmad al-Farahidi, the famous teacher, had any role in this change or development in vocalization. The second question, which arises in my mind, is that many of our earliest books do mention Khalil ibn Ahmad al-Farahidi's biographical note. They tell us that he was the inventor of the discipline of Uruz or prosody, and he was the first person to even compile the dictionary of Arabic, Kitab al-Ayn. But they do not describe any feat or any detail vis-a-vis his involvement in the introduction or the development of these vocalization signs. So one would find, one would wonder why, because if he was the inventor of the discipline of prosody or uruz, and also he was attributed as the first person who compiled the Arabic dictionary, then had he been also involved in the introduction or development of these vowel signs, then this feat should also have been recorded by these books. Now, I'm just going to allude to some of the major books which mention his biography, but do not say anything vis-a-vis his involvement in the development of vocalization signs. First view is Tabaqat Fuhul Shu'ara by Muhammad ibn Salam al-Jumahi. Then we have the Tariq, Tariq al-Kabir of Imam Bukhari. In the third place, viewers, we have Al-Ma'arif of Ibn Qutaybah. And then we have Al-Iqt al-Farid by Ibn Abdir Rabbi. And regarding Iqt al-Farid, viewers, I would like to point out that throughout this six-volume book, there are a number of reports and anecdotes about Khalil in his various capacities. But the whole book is totally devoid of anything which mentions that Khalil had any role in the development of vocalization signs, which is, of course, very strange. Next, in the fifth place, viewers, we have Maratib al-Nahviyin by Abu Tayyib Abdul Wahid. And then we have Akhbar al-Nahviyin al-Basriyin by As-Sairafi. And then in the seventh place, we have Tabaqat al-Nahviyin by Az-Zubaydi. And in the eighth place, we have Al-Fihrist of Ibn Nadim. And then in the ninth place, we have Nuzdul al-Alibba by Abu al-Barakat ibn al-Ambari. And in the tenth place, we have Al-Muntazam by Ibn al-Jawzi. Eleventhly, viewers, we have Imba'ur Ruwat by Al-Qifti. And then we have Mujam al-Udaba by Yaqut al-Hamawi. And then we have Tahzibu Asma wal-Lughat by al-Nawawi. And in the 14th place, we have Wafayatul A'yan by Ibn Khalikan. In the 15th place, we have Tahzib al-Kamal by Hafiz Mizzi. 16thly, we have Tariq al-Islam by Az-Zahabi. And in the 17th place, we have Sayru al-Alam al-Nubala by Hafiz Zahabi. And in the 18th place, we have Al-Ibr fi Khabar man Ghabar. This is also a book by Hafiz Zahabi. And then in the 19th place, we have Al-Wafi Bil Wafayat by Salahuddin As-Safadi. And I would here, in this case, in the case of Salahuddin As-Safadi's book, also like to point out the fact that he records that earlier authorities accord three distinctions to Khalil ibn Ahmad. So he actually points out the earlier authorities have actually commended and lauded Khalil's personality, and they have actually pointed out that he is famous because of three very outstanding and prominent feats that he did. The first of them is that his solid guidance given to his pupil Sibuwayh in writing his book on grammar. Now, we know that Al-Kitab of Sibuwayh is one of the outstanding books of Arabic grammar, and the source book, if we can say, and a book on which most of the later grammar books of Arabic are based. So Sibuwayh is an authority. So the first distinction which is ascribed to Khalil ibn Ahmad is that he gave solid guidance and guided Sibuwayh in writing that book. The second distinction which he has mentioned, which Safadi has mentioned vis-a-vis the earliest authorities according to Khalil ibn Ahmad, is that he was also the inventor of the discipline of prosody. And the third and final distinction that they mention is his magnum opus, which is the Kitab al-Ayn, which is a very detailed dictionary of the Arabic language. And it is strange, it is extremely strange that if he had any role in the development of vocalization sounds, then why is it that, this feat has also not been ascribed to him? Because this is something very prominent in his life, and we would have expected people to say that he actually was distinguished by this fourth feat as well. If he had the three feats already mentioned, three contributions that he made, then this should have been marked as a fourth contribution. And silence here again is something which is very meaningful, and it does raise the question that why is it that the early authorities do not say that he also had any role in the development of vocalization signs. Next, we move on to the 20th book in this, and that is Mir'atul Jinan by Abu Muhammad al-Yaf'i. And then we have in the 21st place Al-Bidaya wa Nihaya by Ibn Kathir. Again, a very comprehensive book, which we know is something which compiles the history, Muslim history in the medieval period, by Ibn Kathir in the medieval period. And then we have Subhul Asha by Al-Qalqashandi. Then in the 23rd place, we have the Muqaddimah of Ibn Khuldun. And we know that it is a very detailed book which describes earliest history as well as medieval history. But again, we do not find Khalil ibn Ahmad being attributed this endeavor. Then viewers, in the 24th place, we have the Bulgha of Fairozabadi. And it's the actual full name of the book is Al-Bulgha fi Tarajim A'imma al-Nahw wal-Lugha. So this again is something which refers to Khalil ibn Ahmad, this book, but it does not mention that he had any role in this regard. In the 25th place, viewers, we have Ghayatul Nihaya by Ibn al-Jazri, again, which is not does not mention any such feat of his. And then in the 26th place, we have Tahzibul Tahzib of Ibn Hajar. And Hafiz Ibn Hajar has actually also given a biographical note on Khalil ibn Ahmad, but that note is devoid of any mention. Then viewers, we have Bughiyatul Wa'at by Suyuti. And then in the 28th place, we have Shazratul Zahab and by Al-Iqri. And that too is absolutely devoid of any mention. In the 29th place, we have Tanqihul Maqal by Al-Maqamani. And he is Sheikh Abdullah al-Maqamani, and his the name of his book is Tanqihul Maqal fi Ilm al-Rijal. So he mentions a reasonably detailed note on Khalil ibn Ahmad, but that note does not contain any sort of insinuation even that he had any role to play in this regard. And finally, viewers, we have Al-A'lam of Zarqali, Khairuddin Zarqali, and he also does not mention that he had any such role. So this is something which is a very strong evidence which points out to the fact that we have almost 30 books ranging from the earliest authorities. The earliest authority, if you remember, I had quoted was Tabaqat Fuhul al-Shu'ara by Muhammad ibn Salam al-Jumahi, and he died in 230 Hijra. So a book which covers the 2nd century is devoid of this book, and right up to 1396 Hijra is Al-Alam of Zarqali. So this is a whole, almost a millennium, more than a millennium in fact, which has elapsed in this, and we can see that these books are devoid of this mention. But let me also be very fair in this regard by citing some of the books which do say that Al-Khalil is was responsible for this endeavor, and I can see that some of these books are prominent. For example, the three of them that I'm going to refer to are very famous books by authorities. Thus, we have Al-Muhkam by Abu Sayyid Ad-Dani, and he records that Abu Hasan ibn Kaysan reports this from Muhammad ibn Yazid al-Mubarrat, that, and Mubarrat we know died in 285 Hijra. So perhaps this is the earliest account recorded by Dani and attributed to Mubarrad, that Khalil ibn Ahmad was responsible for this. And then we have Alif Ba by Al-Balawi, which also mentioned the fact that Khalil ibn Ahmad was responsible for this endeavor. In the third place, we have Al-Wasila ila Kashfil Aqila by Sakhawi. And Sakhawi has actually attributed this to him. And as you can see, that his name is being displayed before you on the screen. He died in 643 Hijra. Then we have Al-Itqan of Suyuti, which also reports the fact that Khalil ibn Ahmad was responsible for this endeavor. So these are the four books which mention or attribute Khalil's development of vocalization signs. And I would also like to point out three contemporary books in this regard, which also attribute this this feat or this development of vocalization signs to Khalil. So first of them is As-Sabil ila Zabti Kalimat al-Tanzil by Ahmad Muhammad Abu Zaytahar. And then we have Hayatul Lugha al-Arabiya by Hifni Bik Nasif. And then in the third place we have Qissatul Kitabat al-Arabiya by Ibrahim Jum'a. So all these three people are very contemporary. They belong to the recent era. And before them, the four people that I pointed out, they are people who belong to the earliest era as well as to the medieval and later era. But the point that I would like to make here is that the abundance of authorities or the copiousness of the authorities which do not mention Khalil's endeavor in this regard is much higher than the people who do mention him. And the paucity of mention is overwhelmingly, the lack of mention is overwhelmingly large. And in relation to it, the people who mention it, they are very small in number. And this actually raises the question that why exactly, or why is it that these people also do not mention the fact that Khalil was responsible for this job. The earliest person that we can think of is Mubarrad. And his statement has been recorded by Hafiz Dani. And again, we have to be very fair in this regard, that although it is absolutely very, we can clearly see that a large number of books do not mention the fact that he was responsible for this development of vocalization signs, but these books do mention it. So here my own question which arises is that why is it that a large number of books do not mention so? So viewers, this brings us to the conclusion of this critique that we began. And if I just recap, I would like to point out that although we still have some more things to say in the next session, and I'll also just give you a hint that that next session, which is the fifth session of this topic, will actually relate to manuscript evidence on whatever has been posited here. If we just recap, we can clearly see that the critique which has been presented in the last three episodes, on the first episode actually, which presented the Muslim accounts, tell us or criticizes these accounts in a manner that seems that unless these questions which have been raised are answered, these Muslim accounts cannot be relied upon. They actually give us the picture that the vowel sounds were introduced first, then came the diacritic sounds, and then again the vowel sounds were given a different shape. So, and the basic reason that all these point out is that because people started to misread the Mus'haf, that this introduction of diacritics and vowel sounds began. So the basic question which comes to my mind is that if this is so, then why is it that the vowel sounds preceded the diacritic sound? Because a common sense approach in this regard would be that diacritics should come first because they are part of the letter themselves, as we can see, clearly see. And this could have caused much more problem than the vowel sounds not being present. And even if we know the fact that, or if we supposedly accept the fact that, as some of our scholars like Abu Ahmad al-Askari and others say, that it was Nasr ibn Asim who had invented these diacritics, even then, if this is accepted, then the question is still in the mind that why is it that the issue of the diacritics did not precede the issue of vowel sounds? And similarly, some of the other questions. But then again, inshallah, I'll, in the next session, when we shall see how manuscripts, the earliest manuscripts, depict or display these diacritics, we will come to a definite conclusion. But for the moment, what I can surmise to my own self or my own approach in this regard is that to me, these three last sessions in which we have critically evaluated the three phases are enough or insufficient for me to think that these Muslim accounts have some problem in them and they cannot be accepted on the face value. And in the next session, which will be the final of this 16th topic, we shall see its manuscripts evidence, the way earliest manuscripts display vowel sound and vocalization, and see how it corroborates the critique that I have presented before you. Till then, أقول قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم ولسائر المسلمين والمسلمات.